Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello and welcome back to the Statman Dave Football Podcast. It has returned. It is season two. Episode one today. I'm joined by a man across the ocean, Nico underscore Omorales. That is his Twitter handle. Nico is his name. Nico, are you excited to get a chance? A chance to be in episode one of season two?
I'm delighted. I'm delighted that I could make season two, episode one of the Statman Dave Football Podcast.
Sweet. Well, today we've got a lot of things to go through. The news. First up, of course, we always dive into news on the Statman Dave Football Podcast. Then we're going to talk a bit about Neymar to PSG, as that is on everyone's lips. And then we're going to discuss the two Manchester clubs, Manchester City United. That's going into Manchester City first. Then finishing up with some United chat, we're going to go through the signings, formations, what we think prediction-wise both teams are going to accomplish over the season. Obviously, Pep Guardiola has done a lot of good work in pre-season. Same with Jose Mourinho. The side is looking a little bit better, a little bit more high-octane. But anyway, first up, let's do the news. So the thing that you can't miss today, of course, is Neymar's move to PSG, reported at around £222 million. Nico, this came out of nowhere, right?
Did it? Did it completely come out of nowhere? I'm really not that surprised, and I think a lot of... I heard your points on TF3, and I think a lot of guys that look at the game and sort of from a tactical perspective will say the same thing. You know, Neymar is a fantastic player. He's got some amazing stats. He's an amazing player. Realistically, he's an amazing offensive player. But there are things that, you know, can deter, and maybe there is a case to be made that Barcelona can come out of this not completely unscathed, but under the new manager, maybe it was better. You know, he's more defensive. He's going to be more about the off-ball pressing and the things that are going to make Barcelona a little bit different, you know, of a team as in comparison to the years past under both Guardiola and Luis Enrique. So, you know, it's a surprising one. Obviously, the transfer record has been completely smashed by, you know, doubling it almost, but it changes the landscape to a very interesting degree.
I'd say so. You know, one of the interesting things, I found an article yesterday that was posted on Reddit of, I think it was in October, that was basically saying PSG have been, you know, organising this move for like the last three seasons, and they've been preparing this bit and so forth. But anyway, we'll talk more about that in more in depth in about 5 minutes, so stay tuned for that. In other news, Negredo has left Valencia on his way to Beşiktaş, moving to Turkey. Of course, Beşiktaş are the only sort of giant team in Turkey right now with money to spend. You're thinking Fenerbahçe and Galatasaray are really penalised by FFP at the moment, so it's an interesting move over there. In other news, the FA diving banning outline has been stated today, giving a two-game ban for a clear and overwhelming evidence for a player that has dived. For me, this is utter rubbish. I think simulation is part of the game. It's gamesmanship. It's part of football as a whole. And to get someone a two-game ban for something that isn't violent, that isn't going to injure someone, that's just part of the game, and it's the referee's decision on the pitch, they should be accountable for me. A two-game ban is ridiculous. Nico, I don't even want to listen to your rubbish on this, because that's my opinions, and this is the Statman Dave Football Podcast. We don't hear any of your rubbish about diving.
I actually think it's not that bad of a rule. Maybe a two-game ban is a little over the top. I think I've said in the past that I would like to see maybe, you know, hit the players where it really matters, not necessarily the teams, but because then why, you know,
in the nuts. That's exactly
not
it,
in the nuts.
That's what
I'm talking
saying.
About in the wallet. You know, hit them with a more financial penalizations for blatant diving. You know, retrospective penalizations. You know, monetarily. Two games is a very harsh one, but I think, you know, if you're looking to completely take diving out of the game, however you want to look at it, that's the most effective way to do that. So I think you and I differ a little bit on the opinion of how they're doing it, but I like it. I want to see less diving.
I want to see more diving. I want to see more tactical fouls. I want to see more yellow cards for Busquets pulling down someone on the counter-attack. I want to see more of that type of thing, because that is a tactical weapon that should still be used in the modern day. In other news, Liverpool's interest in Virgil van Dijk continues. Virgil van Dijk didn't travel with the Southampton squad on their, you know, tour. I think they went to France or something like that to play some friendlies. Virgil van Dijk didn't stay there. Of course, with all this news about Neymar, Coutinho could follow to Barcelona or even to PSG. Maybe they'll get some even more cash to pay for Virgil, but a decent defender, but again, we're really over the price. And the last bit of news before we dive into the Neymar to PSG chat is mission complete, Nico. Roma have sent Francesco Totti's final shirt that he had as a player into space. That's great, right?
Wow. I had no idea. I hadn't even seen that on the running order. Why would they send it into space? I'm really wondering.
I think, Nico, that they want it to last forever. They want the aliens, the first, you know, the first time that humans meet aliens or people of, you know, similar type of, you know, humanoid or whatever. Mm-hmm. They want Francesco Totti to be the first footballer that's recognised. Maybe they'll all be Totti fans. Maybe they'll come back and they'll support Roma. Yeah, it could be interesting anyway. Anyway, let's move on from that absolute tosh that I was chatting there. It's time to talk the three talking points. And first up, it is Neymar to PSG. It will be the end of MSN. Neymar, Suarez and Messi. But for €220 million, that is crazy money, right, Nico?
That is ridiculous money. The game is gone. Just kidding. No, I mean, it's the market. It is what it is. That's really what you're going to have to pay. You know, we're talking about a top three to top five player in the world right now. Not only that, but I think something that people don't really take into account for a lot of these transfer fees is, you know, Neymar is an extremely marketable player. He's a young man. He's the face of Nike. You know, they have, you know, Paul Pogba is arguably the face of Adidas right now. In terms of the face of Nike, you know, they've given him his own, you know, Hypervenom a couple times. Now they've given him his own Vapor. So he's going to sell shirts. He's going to give you those performances. Like you said earlier, I don't disbelieve that PSG have been planning this sort of swoop for him for a long time, because this is their goal. This is why the group that took over PSG want to win the Champions League. They've won Liga five times in a row. Fine, they lost it this season. I think they have the coach in place to do that. Obviously, they put in a fantastic performance against Barcelona in the first leg last season. They just needed to finish it off in the second leg. But adding someone like Neymar, refining the qualities, you know, moving that transition from a Laurent Blanc PSG to an Unai Emery PSG team, adding Neymar, I mean, it's really, really difficult to look past PSG for this year's Champions League. I mean, it's an incredible move, and I think one that like I said, is really going to change the landscape.
Very interesting. Again, it's crazy. You think in the Paul Pogba deal for £89 million it seems like a bit of a bargain now in this day and age. After this transfer, again, I think it's going to ruin fees all round. I think the domino effect that I spoke about before, Coutinho may move on. There's a whole host of players that we'll talk about a little bit later on, but it just seems mental, absolutely mental. For that €222 million, you could have bought a few things. First up, we'll talk players. You could have bought two Pogbas, three Zidanes, four Buffons, or five Ronaldos. That's the Brazilian Ronaldo, the guy that was absolutely credible at scoring goals. But in terms of real stuff that you could buy for that €222 million, you could buy some real things as well. We're talking 428 flats in central London, 1,009 Lamborghini Huracans. Don't know what the car that is, but it, you know, it came up on Google. Or potentially, if you wanted to go crazy with iPhone 7s, you could get 343,653 iPhone 7s, or if you're big onto your chocolate, you could get 888 million Freddos. Nico, do you know what a Freddo is?
No, as I just said, what the hell is a Freddo?
So a Freddo, to be precise, is a little chocolate bar It used to be 10p, used to be a good value at 10p, and it's now inflated up to around 25p, but a solid little chocolate bar to get you through a day.
Is it a frog? Anyway, that's what I'm saying.
It's a little frog, Have you Googled it? But anyway, if you wanted to, you know, if you wanted a Freddo, Nico, when you come to London, I'll buy you a Freddo. You can, you know, you can cash that in later on. But Nico, in your, you know, humble opinion, would you say that this year, in terms of Neymar's performances, has warranted this fee of 222 million? Euros.
Yeah, I would say I would definitely say that Neymar is, you know, how can you really, I guess it depends on how you rationalize things and how you talk about, you know, is he worth the 222 million? Like I mentioned before, he has a marketable asset about him, so he's going to bring that to PSG. But then also, I think this is a player that's had the ability to go to Barcelona and learn under the greatest player of all time, and Neymar might never come close to Lionel Messi's standards. I don't think he will. I don't think we're going to see a player that's as good as Lionel Messi for a long, long time, if ever again. But in terms of coming close to that, in terms of that mercurial ability to, you know, as cliche as it sounds, take the game by the scruff of the neck like he did against PSG when his team needed him the most. You know, I don't like Neymar that much. I don't like the style of play that much. I think a lot of tactical guys don't, because the nature of his game is take-ons, which are like low percentage things regardless. But, you know, he steps up when the team needs him. He does like to have a go at the other team, and he does try things. And I think if you're going to try to win the biggest prize in club football, then you need a player like that. You need, or if you want to ensure that you win it, you need a player like Neymar. So in terms of the monetary value, I know people are going to get hung up on the 222 million, but I think given, you know, that's really what you have to pay for someone like him, I think you got your money's worth.
I think it's absolutely crazy. And I just don't know whether, you know, I just can't comprehend that amount of money in real terms. I think that's the thing. It's a crazy amount of money. It could change like towns, it could change cities, it could change countries, and that could impact millions and millions of people. But we're seeing it on one footballer. It's, you know, this weird situation that we live in right now. But, you know, you mentioned that PSG game. It was absolutely fantastic. Won the penalty that Messi scored to make it 3-1, was fouled, then banged in a free kick that was just into the top corner, you know, unsavable. Scored the fifth from the spot and then assisted the last goal with just an unbelievable bit of skill, feinting past an on-rushing attacker and then chipping it with his weaker foot to Roberto to, you know, to bang in the back of the net, and Barcelona to take the lead and go on to win the tie. But in terms of stats this season in La Liga, he created the most chances of any player, he grabbed the most assists in the Champions League, his season by numbers is pretty decent as well, played 3,972 minutes, was directly involved in a goal every 97 minutes, getting 21 assists and scoring 20 goals. But Nico, the big question is, where would he fit in at PSG?
That's the difficult thing, right? Because they've just recently brought in Julian Draxler, who's fit in really well on that sort of left wing, and this is really the first place that we've seen, because Julian Draxler has been on the radar for a number of years now. It's just he hasn't really fit into a place quite as well as he has, you know, at PSG. But that's the difficulty, is that I think you have to play Neymar on the left. That's his best position. He does like to cut inside, and with someone like Kurzawa overlapping, you know, you have a brilliant dynamic there, and possibly, you know, Blaise Matuidi likes to come forward. So that relationship between those three players in a 4-3-3 system could be exceptional. But then where do you put Draxler? You could possibly put him through the middle. You could put him on the right. So it's going to be interesting to see how someone like Unai Emery, who, you know, in his time at Sevilla was maybe a little bit more defensively focused, you know, about the off-ball pressing, like I mentioned. And it's something that you've mentioned as well, which is, you know, one of the things that has brought this lack of success to Barcelona over the past couple of years, despite them having, you know, the greatest attacking, you know, attacking line in, you know, football history, is the fact that Neymar and possibly some of the other forwards have shirked their defensive responsibilities. So it's going to be interesting to see how someone like Unai Emery not only balances that from a tactical perspective, but also balances that from a personal perspective, you know, dealing with that caliber of player. He wasn't dealing with that type when he was at Sevilla. He was dealing with players that he was getting more than people saw out of them, whereas now he's at that top club, so he's dealing with these bigger egos and these players that, you know, have these almost chips on their shoulders. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do there.
100%. Again, going back to the sort of Sevilla example, you think of all the strikers that he went through that came to the club with not tarnished records, but they needed to perform there, and he did get the, you know, the extra out of them. Other places that he could potentially play as a number 10, we saw him play that role for Brazil. He's sort of given the freedom to drift around. Unai Emery does like the 4-2-3-1. Will he go back to that? I don't really know. I think this 4-3-3 is kind of ingrained into PSG, and you do mention that, you know, Kozawa, the overlap there would be perfect, but also Blaise Matuidi, thinking how the shape could evolve if they were playing a 4-3-3, it would be sort of the other way around to Barca when they won the Champions League in 14-15, where it rocked around, Neymar became the left winger, and then Rakitic went out to right mid, and they broke into a 4-4-2 in defence. That could work with Matuidi coming over to the left wing. He's very, very good at doing that shuttling role. But again, it's can Emery get that other winger to defend, and that's the problem. That was the problem with Neymar in the Champions League in the last two seasons, is he stopped defending. The season they won it and he was brilliant, what, scored 10 goals, joint top scorer, scored the most in the knockout stages, was just scored crucial goals for Barcelona, was always on the end of the, you know, a Messi pass or a Iniesta through ball, but he just forgot that he's got to do his defensive work. And if that attitude continues with him, you're thinking Julian Draxler, who's had a wonderful season for PSG and really exploded since his move. Like, is he going to be able to want to defend? Is Angel Di Maria going to want to defend? Lucas Moura does defend, but, you know, how far down the picking line is he now? It's kind of like, what does Emery do to his attack? I think he's the biggest problem. I think his midfield will eventually sort itself out. I think it's signing Dani Alves, you know, defensively that'll help out. Maybe even Dani Alves is a right winger. What do you think of that, Nico? So maybe a 4-3-3 as Alves as one of the as the right attacker and Neymar as a left attacker, Cavani through the middle.
That would really work in terms of balance, because, like, you know, you and I have touched on a number of times, is that a lot of people think Dani Alves is still a right back. He's more of a right winger that comes back and plays, you know, a more defensive role at times. You know, he gives that dynamic, but in terms of being lopsided and maybe accentuating some side of the attack, you know, you could have the complete, you know, attacking mindedness of, like you said, Matuidi, Kurzawa, and Neymar on the left, and then really solid defensively with someone like Serge Aurier and Dani Alves and somebody else in midfield on the right, maybe Rabiot or someone like that. So you could have this like really lopsided formation where they can, you know, do different things with the overloads and positioning. So I think I'm, you know, League One is going to be really exciting to watch next season regardless. But now that Neymar's there, I mean, tune in, folks.
Definitely looking at Bielsa's there, your Marseille are in resurgence, of course, Lucien, we know what Monaco are doing, yeah. Lucien Favre's there, like, that's going to be absolutely insane, and probably be the league I may watch the most in a way. I quite like Serie A though. Serie A's also Serie been an absolute great banger, but we'll probably talk about, you know, top leagues to watch later on. But PSG are going to look very, very tasty. Could you see Cavani maybe falling out of favour, Neymar playing as a false nine, as a striker, Nico?
I don't think so. I think, like you said, the 4-3-3 is very ingrained in PSG's, you know, the way that they've structured their squad, and I think the players are most comfortable playing a system that's either that or similar to that. And I think, despite all the shit that Cavani gets for not finishing chances, I think it's similar to Ibrahimovic in a sense, where he actually does finish exceptionally well, and he's an exceptional finisher. He's differentiated himself statistically amongst the rest of the strikers in Europe over the past 10 years, and that's a consistent record. So it's not, you know, a bolt out of the blue or a season out of the blue. He's a very good striker consistently. So I think with Neymar sort of taking some of the attention on the left, and then whoever they put on the right, and all the attacking influence they'll have, I think actually Cavani could have one of his best seasons in front of goal.
I agree. Cavani is one of those strikers. He's like Aubameyang. You just have to create him like 10 chances in a game and he'll score twice or three times. You know, it's that consistency.
And his
not like a
his
clinical
movement is
movement,
fantastic.
Excellent. Really, really good. Yeah. I imagine, you know, not watching football, you know, I grew up watching United and whatever, but I don't have the same analytical view on someone like Andy Cole, but he was always described as a player for me that was in the right place at the right time but didn't take his chances. So his movement was spot on, like the likes of Aubameyang, like the likes of Cavani, but he wasn't clinical in front of goal and got a bit of stick for that. So it's quite interesting how strikers do come back and revolve again and so forth, and they are, you know, Edison Cavani's a top player, and I imagine with Neymar on the left wing, again, like you mentioned, taking the attention away. I think that's what Cavani needs in a way. He needs to, you know, take a bit of a step back and then, you know, come out of nowhere and people forget about him anyway. But
also,
let's move on.
To speak to his credit, you know, this is a striker, and, you know, we talk about the build and the athleticism of players in the modern game and how fluid they are in positions. But I mean, I think most of us see Cavani as, especially in a 4-3-3, as that central focal point. You know, he's not the quickest. He is quick, but he operated as like a left winger under Laurent Blanc a lot of the time, which is such a weird position. And he still did okay. So to have that, you know, being played out of position. Now he has more experience on the in wide areas, and I just think, you know, Edinson Cavani is really underappreciated, sort of similar to Gonzalo Higuain. Like, these guys are excellent. I think he'll do exceptionally well with Neymar.
I think the thing with Higuain and Cavani, just that quick comparison, Higuain is your clinical guy that won't get that many chances, you know, won't open himself up that much with movement, but you know, if the ball gets to his feet and in and around the penalty area, he's probably going to score a goal, which is pretty nuts. Anyway, so PSG are PSG, and they will go on to battle Monaco for the title. It's going to be so interesting. If you didn't catch the Champions of the Cup versus the Liga Champions. It was a really good game. PSG coming out on top in that game, but a player that you're going to see a lot more in this Monaco team, a guy that's going to be the creative guy, Youri Tielemans, grabbed a cracking assist for a Sidibe goal. It was actually like a bit of a bounce pass where he was a little bit stationed a little bit deeper and played a great ball through to the wing back. Sidibe looked fantastic and scored a great goal. But again, it's going to be the evolution. Bernardo Silva obviously has joined Manchester City. We'll talk about him a bit later on, but that creative hub in this Monaco team need someone to step up, and it will be Youri Tielemans. But Liga is going to be great. Anyway, let's move to La Liga. What is next for Barcelona? What do you think they've got to do to regain their position at the top of the European game, Nico?
It's a difficult one, because you could say, you know, you could go down one route and say you could play the formation that won the Champions League this season, or at least won the final, which is that 4-4-2 diamond, right? You have the players to do that. You can play Luis Suarez up top, maybe not with Messi, but with someone like Paco Alcacer, or possibly even Rafinha. Or a more mobile player to play up front and connect the passes and whatnot, because I think, like you and I have talked about many times, it's Messi at 10 is just absolutely brilliant. But I think they don't necessarily have the wide players to do that. We've seen Alex Vidal, who someone that Luis Enrique bought, hasn't seen very much play time, if at all, at Barcelona, and you kind of need athleticism in those areas, and Jordi Alba's getting on in age, so it's going to be difficult to see where they go. I'm excited to see defensively and sort of modern pressing-wise how Valverde balances that with the players that he has now. But I think it's an area of transition for Barcelona. You know, Busquets is getting up there in age. They still have Iniesta, who's playing consistently, but they don't really have the replacement. So a lot of these key guys are moving on in these positions, and they haven't really done much to see the replacement. So I'm personally not exactly sure where they could go, but one thing's for sure is that you can't keep depending on Iniesta. You know, he's held that team up for so long that you need that creator, and you also need someone like Busquets. You know, you look at replacements, possibly William Carvalho, but more realistically, Julian Weigl is the perfect replacement in that sense. But how difficult is it to get those guys? And with another question that comes up with this Neymar thing, $222 million, great. Now how do you spend it? Do you go out and get Ousmane Dembele? Do you have that creation on the right? You know, he's definitely one of the most exciting young players that's in a similar mold to a traditional winger like Neymar was, or at least one that can create things from wide areas. But how do they spend this money?
I think it's a good point. I think you're forgetting Nelson Semedo. They signed from Benfica, right back.
He's going to be fantastic.
That's you know, one of the signings of the summer, €30 million for Nelson Semedo. You must be mad. Like, this is the crazy thing. Like, City were looking for a fullback, right? They spent €50 million on Kyle Walker. Honestly, Nelson Semedo has a higher ceiling than Kyle Walker and will be a better player. But again, it's weird, introverted Premier League. So on that right back, I think they've got good cover there. I think, as you mentioned, it is the question on Andres Iniesta's fitness, whether Valverde will go with Rakitic. I think he will. I think Rakitic is the perfect Valverde player in central midfield. But it is kind of finding a stopgap for Andres Iniesta, and kind of getting of how long can he play for. And another big one is bringing players through their academy. It's something that they've not really done well enough. You think Real Madrid, how well they've created this B team. I keep talking about with the likes of Isco was playing in the B team for quite a bit of last season, but the B team they've created with these young players is pretty incredible. And with Llorente coming back from, where was he? I can't remember who he was. Somewhere in Spain in La Liga, just
Marcos
chilling.
Llorente.
Yeah, which club was he at?
It might have been Espanyol. No, that was Denis Ceballos.
It was the new Maurizio Pellegrini's old club.
Alaves.
I think he was at Alaves, yeah. I think. Let's double check that just in case we're wrong.
But Dani Ceballos looks a real talent as well. I think also to speak to sort of the midfield problems and the things that I think also relate to PSG, and you're talking about Tolisso and some of these guys, I think the most productive midfielder, and we're seeing different roles pop up within the modern game. That's, you know, because the game has changed so much over the past 20 years, is you need a player that's going to progress the ball from those deeper areas, those ball progression stats, as well as you look at someone like Dani Ceballos and possibly Tolisso as well, that receives the ball sort of right in front of the back four, in between the lines, and turns and can make things happen. I think Iniesta has played that role as well as the progression role for so long that his creation from there, although it hasn't directly appeared in, you know, the concrete statistics of key passes or even, you know, assists or anything like that, that role that he plays in linking that midfield is so important. And so they've leaned upon that. But, you know, it's time to get a guy that can do a similar job. And it's really difficult to find quality players and that can do that, you know, exceptionally well. That's why they go for so much money.
I think that's a big thing. Again, Barcelona, I think with one thing they've got to do is Messi has to become the fulcrum of the side. I think whether they play a diamond or they play whatever system, it's going to have to be Lionel Messi off Luis Suarez. I think that worked really well in the back end of the season when they played PSG. They played a sort of 3-6-1 with Messi behind Suarez at a midfield five, in a way, of Busquets holding Rakitic and Iniesta, Neymar on the left, Rafinha on the right, and the back three of Umtiti, Piqué and Mascherano. I think that could really work well, getting Messi as a sort of number 10, be it in a, you know, a 4-2-3-1, be it in a 4-4-2 diamond, as you alluded to before, which could really work for Barcelona in terms of a change of system. You know,
do you
making
think
those slight tweaks.
Do you think there's
works?
A possibility that also, because you said, you know, Umtiti, Piqué, and Mascherano, you know, if you counter down the sides, especially in a competition like the Champions League, playing someone like United, you know, you can really fall prey to the sort of the latter stages of Jurgen Klopp's reign at Dortmund, where you can expose those center backs in wide areas. You know, that's a difficulty that they might face.
I think they will do that if they, you know, they do play a back three or they do play a narrow 4-4-2 diamond. You know, you're talking the fullbacks going forward, Busquets dropping in between Piqué and Umtiti. I'd say Umtiti's fine at doing that. I think Umtiti's great at covering ground, you know, very, very quick, strong, physical, has played left back in his career. So I think that would kind of work. But again, like you mentioned, Gerard Piqué could be something that may not quite work in that system, but I think he would work. I think defensively, when Barcelona are at the top, Piqué's always at the top. You know, it doesn't matter what season. He's had a few seasons where he's been off and then he's been you know, best centre-back in the world again. So it's going to be an interesting one. But in terms of signings, let's talk signings, Nico. Who do you think they're going to go for? The players have been linked with Dybala, Mbappe, Antoine Griezmann. You mentioned Ousmane Dembele before. Philippe Coutinho. Who do you think fits in this new Barcelona team? Is there any players I've not mentioned there that you'd like to see?
That's the thing, is that I'm really not sure. I think it's more about central midfielders. I think if they could have worked out a way to get someone like Marco Verratti, who I see, you know, a similar ilk to someone like Xavi or Iniesta, that would have been great for them. And you know, maybe they lose Neymar, but they get that really good central fulcrum that can make things happen. But I think Dybala is a weird one, especially if you're going to play Messi in midfield. Maybe someone like him and Suarez can play up top in a two, but at the same time, I don't know if that really works in that way. So I think it's really, for me, more about the midfielders. But in terms of suggestions, I mean, you have to look at one of the biggest mistakes that I think they made, which was losing someone like Thiago Alcantara, who's looks like he's going to spend the rest of his days at Bayern Munich because of how happy he is and the respect the club showed him in his year of injury. But someone like him would fit in absolutely fantastic, you know, at Barcelona, especially currently.
It's an interesting one. It really is, like letting one of these stars go again. I think that's bad management from the club. Again, something that maybe hasn't really been touched on, but you think in the Neymar buyout was set at €222 million. That was a year ago. Technically, if you're in that position to calculate inflation and so forth, you should probably have a good gauge of where the market's going to go next. In terms of, if Pogba's been signed for $89 million that summer, you know, double that, triple that, quadruple that, that might happen, of how the market's going. So, you know, one thing that you could bring up on that is the Ronaldo buyout is at £1 billion. That's a smart buyout. PSG aren't going to play £1 billion, but maybe, you know, setting it at $222 million with Neymar was some bad management from the Barcelona board. It was reported today that they've spent over $200 million on Neymar in terms of paying fines, in terms of wages, in terms of transfer. So they're only making €23 million, which is crazy for a player of that quality. But in terms of signings, I think Antoine Griezmann would be number one if I was, you know, the head of the Barcelona board. Obviously, he said he doesn't want to leave, but is Barcelona a different opportunity than Manchester United? is that somewhere where he could comfortably go in? Yes, he'd be perfect to play in that 4-4-2 diamond we spoke about before. Suarez is comfortable at drifting wide, so is Griezmann. Messi, with someone like Griezmann ahead of him, that pace that Griezmann's got and acceleration would be absolutely unbelievable. Similar with Mbappe, a similar thing there. Mbappe likes to drift into the channels, start central, but is it a move too soon for him? Should he stay at Monaco? Yes. Maybe Dybala, they've spoke about how they want to get Dybala, but again, it's that left-footed Argentinian attacker. They've already got Messi. It would quite work again in the same system, but if you were to play a 4-3-3, you know, is Dybala going to work on the left-hand side? Probably not. So it's really interesting that he's got to be a player that works in the system. Dembele, is he going to play on the right? Messi's playing on the right at the moment. Where does Dembele fit in? I think someone that does actually make sense in a way, if he can continue his good form of last season and the season before when he played in a 4-4-2 diamond, is Coutinho. Someone that actually would make sense to go in and replace Andres Iniesta if they feel that he can step up. You know, there was talk that he may follow Neymar to PSG.
I think there's the question there that I think you're gonna answer. But how do you play him? Do you play him as an inside forward, sort of in the left wing, cutting inside, which I don't think is his best position, or do you play him as a midfielder? Like I said, you know, in between those lines, receiving the ball and then creating that pass. I actually think that there are players that are better that Barcelona could go and get that are better at doing that than Philippe Coutinho. I think our judgment of Philippe Coutinho is largely biased in the sense that, you know, he's that Brazilian. He's done great things at Liverpool to some extent, but maybe someone like Christian Eriksen would fit in at Barcelona. What do you think about that?
I was actually about to bring up Christian Eriksen. Wow, Nico, our minds work the same. We're basically telepathic. But yeah, I do think Coutinho, we are a little bit biased. I think the injury problem is something that Barcelona wouldn't want, given that the reason why they're replacing Andres Iniesta is because his knees are a bit crocked. But someone like Christian Eriksen, I think this is the perfect time. You know, I saw him as a very inconsistent 22-year-old playing against Manchester United at Old Trafford. Wasn't very impressed. I was more impressed that night by Semi De Jong, how different their careers have gone. But in terms of what he could do at Barca, you know, he could change this system up and they could go with a 4-2-3-1. Maybe, you know, they do sign another left winger, they get someone like Dembele, they play Dembele on the left, they play Eriksen as a number 10 and they play Messi on the right, Suarez through the middle. That could work very well. Again, defensively, probably wouldn't be what Valdeverde wants. Or Eriksen could play on the left, could play on the right. I think Eriksen's really shown over the last few seasons that he's really evolving his game, and he's a very smart footballer, a very Barcelona-esque footballer. If you traditionally think of what Barcelona players have, the flair, the ability on the ball, the ability to play that pass, that's what Christian Eriksen can do. So I think it would be a cracking acquisition if they went for Eriksen. I think it would be expensive, but they have the money to do that. And, you know, the classic Ajax to Barca link has always been there. So could be a very good suggestion, Nico. I like that we thought the same thing there in terms of player recruitment. But again, my ideal situation for Barcelona would be the 4-4-2 diamond, Ter Stegen in goal, Nelson Semedo right back, Piqué Umtiti, Albert left back. Then Busquets, Rakitic in midfield, Coutinho, Messi, Dybala and Suarez. That'd be a great team to watch. But maybe throw in a bit of Christian Eriksen in there, Nico. What do you reckon?
I think another point about Christian Eriksen is that if we're talking about in terms, you know, through the lens of someone like Valverde, then Christian Eriksen fits in even better because, like I said, it's about that off-ball movement. It's about that off-ball defensive pressure. And Christian Eriksen has done that for seasons under Mauricio Pochettino. I think not enough is attributed to him in terms of how he presses. A lot of the time in these pressing systems under Jurgen Klopp or Pochettino or these other, you know, perhaps Yardim to some extent, people look at certain players like they're exempt from the pressing actions. But no, they actually influence. They work as hard as everyone else. They just have different roles. And Christian Eriksen is an exceptionally gifted footballer. And like you said, he's very smart. So he could fit in much better than someone like Philippe Coutinho. But at the same time, I think since we are talking about transfers, we have to talk about all the dynamics of the transfer. And that in that sense, the marketability of bringing in someone like Coutinho, who's Brazilian, you know, they've had their it's the prototypical player that is more marketable to the Barcelona aspect. I mean, how much do you think that weighs on? Because realistically, you know, there's not that much of a difference between the two, but I think Christian Eriksen is the better fit.
Yeah, I think that marketability in that should take no influence on a transfer. That's my personal opinion. That would be the opinion if I were managing a club and a board came to me with that outlet. It's who fits the team best, who's going to win league titles, therefore will sell more shirts. I just had a thought, Nico.
You just had a
thought? There's a certain Swedish player at Manchester United that's training at the moment, that's on a free transfer. Valdeverde likes his big players. He likes his Aridis. He likes his Raul Garcias. Is Zlatan going to make a return to the new camp?
I don't think so, Dave. I don't think anybody besides LA Galaxy will be taking a chance on Zlatan's crap knee.
Excuse me. I've got a crap knee, and I can still play football sometimes. But anyway, moving.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Gone to some more Zlatan Ibrahimovic related stuff. We're going to talk about Manchester now, City United. That was the banner that was put up by Manchester United after winning the Europa League. A great situation for United getting into the Champions League. One bit of news that's come out after that, though, Phil Jones apparently has been suspended for 2 European games following verbally abusing a UEFA anti-doping officer at the Europa League final who basically pulled him to do his tests as Manchester United were taking that picture, something that is just absolutely ridiculous. And again, UEFA in a situation where they should think about being more human and looking at the bigger picture. You know, a tragedy that's just happened in their city. Come on, you can do it 10 minutes later, or you can do it like, an hour later or whatever. You may get hammered by your boss or whatever. You may miss a window to get the doping fully tested. But at the same time, like, come on. There's bigger things in football sometimes. But anyway, first up, let's talk about Manchester City, who for me have looked very, 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 very good in pre-season and arguably favourites for the Premier League title right now for me. City had a number of issues going into the window. Their fullbacks were too old. They still had two dodgy keepers and they just didn't know how to sort out their defence. It looked a little bit better on the back end of the season with Vincent Kompany coming back. Nico, are you happy with how the off-season's gone for Manchester City and Pep Guardiola's side?
Yeah, I think I've gotten a lot of what I asked for, which was more, not necessarily defensive reinforcements, but the need for fullbacks was necessary. And I think it was actually, not everything that the people in the analytics community, the statistics community, is perfect because, it is flawed, just like things within the tactics community. They trade off. We can see there's a trend line between expected goals conceded and expected goals created, and Manchester City were constantly on the up last season. The attack was just getting better and better and better, and the defense as the season went on was getting better as well. So I think adding to that, Mendy and Walker and Danilo, these guys aren't just defensive signings. They're not just signings to supposedly shore up the defense. They're signings to, I think some of the analysis that you've talked to me about is, the static nature of someone like Gal Clichy or Bakary Sagna or Pablo Zabaleta in the final third last season. Those players freezing up in those areas and not moving to the correct spaces or not providing a certain outlet for a pass were as responsible or as culpable in creating high fidelity chances for teams on the counter or teams that wanted to be more direct as, some shoddy defending. So I think athleticism was needed, but also intelligence. And that's what I'm excited to see out of a lot of these players. And just to speak to some of the other signings, you know, Bernardo Silva is someone that I've written up on, and I think he's going to be spectacular at Manchester City. He didn't, you know, he showed what he can do, actually, ironically, against Manchester City in the Champions League last season.
Oh, and how, you know, dynamic for some people, Nico, other people like myself watch Marseille under Bielsa and were exceedingly impressed by him then. But, you know, go on.
And you know, Bernardo Silva is one of those players that can create, you know, just fantastic, magical football, I might even say, from the middle of the pitch. And so I'm really, really excited to see what someone like Bernardo Silva, how someone like him develops under Guardiola, because I think they're actually building something really special in Manchester City, and I'm glad that I get to witness it.
I think Silva's an interesting one. I think Silva's a Guardiola signing, and I say that in Guardiola makes strange signings sometimes. You think about City's attack is so stacked. City's attacking midfield is so stacked. Why are you bringing another attacking midfielder? I don't understand that. It was similar to what Bayern Munich, where he just bought loads of central midfielders and he ended up being like, who's my best choice midfield? And then he ended up not knowing what that was, and that really made Bayern suffer in the long run. So I think Silva's a wonderful player. I think Silva was one of the best players in the Champions League, one of the best players for Monaco. You know, so good coming off that right flank and creating, you know, being moving into the attacking midfield and playing through balls and dictating the play. The game you mentioned against Manchester City, Bernardo Silva won more tackles than anyone on the pitch in the first half of that game. And it was incredible to see a player that technically is so good on the ball, great vision, but works hard. And yes, maybe that's why Guardiola wants him. But again, how many attackers do you have? It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, but I also think at the same time, one thing that is consistent with, I think, both the transfer or the transfers from both Manchester teams is that both Pep Guardiola and Jose Mourinho know that they need multiple solutions or multiple, you know, go-to formations and go-to systems that they can have and to solve multiple problems that they'll have over the season. You know, they're planning for absolutely everything, and I think Bernardo Silva is one of those things. You know, we could see a 4-3-3, we could see a 3-2-5, we could see a 3-5-2 from both Manchester City or both Manchester teams. Sorry. So, you know, moving on to Manchester United, I have a question for you. I know that a lot of the analysis, and this is something I spoke about earlier this week, is that, you know, the signing of Nemanja Matic is going to free up someone like Pogba. But from my perspective, if they wanted to free up Paul Pogba to further him in midfield, they could have just done that last year. You know, they had some of the pieces, and maybe it wouldn't have been as good. You know, Nemanja Matic is a fantastic defensive midfielder, and he's a really good holding midfielder. But realistically, if they wanted to play Pogba further up the field, they could have done that last season. How do you, you know, realistically see Matic playing? Is it a three-man midfield with someone like, you know, him and Herrera and Pogba sort of in that three-man midfield role, or how do you see it playing out?
I think it's going to be an interesting one. I think it is it's analysis that was sort of, you know, it does make sense. The analysis makes sense. The analysis made sense like 2 months ago, but for some reason, you know, this analysis of Matic freeing up Pogba, the media's taken like 2 months to catch up. It's quite frustrating because it's something that I spotted and I pointed out a while ago and made that link a while ago, and it just seems like they've finally caught up. But it's not, I don't think it's freeing up Pogba. I think it's allowing Pogba to play further up the pitch. I think that's the big thing. It's basically because United was so weak in defensive midfield last season in terms of actually having some physicality there and having someone there that you couldn't get around, that Pogba had to come back and Pogba had to think a little bit more defensively responsible. But if you're opening it up and you've got someone like Nemanja Matic that's got great defensive work in him, that can win tackles, that can bully people off the ball, you think about the clashes that he had with Yaya Toure, especially at the start of Matic's Premier League career at Chelsea. Great battles when Yaya Toure was the best central midfielder in the Premier League. Yaya Toure was just so powerful. It was a great battle between those two powerhouses. And I think that allows Pogba, it allows Herrera forward, it allows the wing-backs forward and so forth. But it's just this one signing that's kind of key. And yeah, it's not fun signing a defensive midfielder that's 28 for 40 million, but it will be one of the most important signings of the summer. But anyway, we're going to talk about that a little bit later on, Nico. Let's talk fullbacks, Walker, Mendy and Danilo. They're kind of the guys that you need. You know, you did mention before about how City were, you know, poor in the final third. They didn't have that width. They're going to get that from Walker. They're going to get that from Mendy. And, of course, they're going to get that from Danilo. Do you think the 3-5-2 that City have been playing, or the 3-5-1-1, as Guardiola called it, is what the City are going to play with all season? Or do you think it will be interchangeable like Manchester United, like you spoke about before?
I think it's going to be interchangeable. It's multiple solutions to multiple different problems. You know, teams are going to present things differently, and you're going to have to be you're going to be asked to create space differently. And I think Mendy and Walker will aid in creating space both wide and I think vertically as well. We saw I've been watching a lot of older Barcelona, you know, Pep Guardiola Barcelona, and the role that someone like Eric Abidal played and someone like Dani Alves, and I'm not comparing Mendy and Walker to those two fantastic players, but I think they'll play sort of, you know, similar roles. They have overlapping abilities. One of Mendy's biggest, you know, strengths last season was putting in these crosses, and I've seen a lot of videos, a lot of training videos of Guardiola's sessions at Manchester City, and there's a way, there's a specific way that he likes to structure it, because they're not normal crosses. They are like clear, created crosses over an overlap, and then he structures the run-ins in a way that there is a really high possibility of a Manchester City player getting on the end of a low cross. And so I think Mendy will play that extremely well, and then I think, you know, Kyle Walker will also have that ability to put in some lower crosses into that, you know, build-up. It's all about how that, you know, run-in is structured as well, but also creating space vertically, you know, playing out of the back, having those players understand how the build-up works at Manchester City, Ederson's ability to distribute in those ways, and then, you know, manipulating formations to allow for a certain degree of directness is also important as well. You know, accentuating the speed of someone like Raheem Sterling and Leroy Sané, that connection will be direct. I think people are going to be surprised how direct Manchester City are next season.
I think both Manchester clubs are suited to playing a 3-5-2. I think they should potentially stick with that system. I think it just looks best for their squad. I think defensively, both teams do need three guys at the back. I don't think 1v1, they're kind of good enough yet. Any of the centre-halves, I think in Vincent Kompany, yes, but the rest of the centre-halves need players around them, I think, to get the best out of them. So it's going to be interesting to see a 3-6-1, should we call the Man City, play next season. But anyway, let's move to Manchester United. United needed a lot of problem solving. They needed goals from midfield. They needed a defensive midfielder, a centre-back. They needed to replace Zlatan. And of course, maybe they need a bit more variation in those wide areas. The signings for United have been good. Lindelof moving from Benfica, Lukaku from Everton, and Nemanja Matic from Chelsea. Nico, they're good signings, right? That solves a number of the issues. You've got to replace Zlatan, you've bought a centre-half, and you've got a defensive midfielder.
Yeah, I think it does solve a lot of the issues. But one thing that people shouldn't fall prey to, and I think you've spoken to this as well, is, you know, if United play the same way that they did last year, and they simply expect, you know, the supposed elevation of or more chances finished, you know, from Lukaku, but they play in the same way, that's not going to elevate them to the status that they want to be in the league. It's about playing a little bit differently. It's about using those other signings, and I think also being a little Mourinho needs to be a little bit riskier in his attacking. In his attacking actions. I think that's the beauty of what's going on right now in Manchester, specifically between these two clubs, is that you have extremes of two different styles of football. You have Jose Mourinho, who I think takes, in certain situations, takes absolutely no risks in his attacking actions, and it's all about defense, and it's all about sort of managing the game state and kind of luring your opponents to make stupid decisions. I think that's even part of Jose Mourinho's philosophy, is that you can manipulate someone into doing what you want, and that's sort of the manipulation of game state that he's so good at. And then you have the opposite of that, which is Guardiola always wants the ball. He takes a lot of risks in his attacking actions. We've seen, you know, the 40 yards of backspace that only two defenders are responsible for. We've seen all of these things, and maybe there's a call for him to be a little bit more defensively minded, be a little bit less risky. So I think the two extremes going on between the Manchesters right now is something that is going to be fantastic to watch. But in terms of the signings that Manchester United have made, you talk about goals from midfield. I think that's a problem that could be solved with the players that, you know, you had last season. You know, why isn't Henrik Mkhitaryan being used more consistently? Why isn't he being used in the ways that best accentuate his qualities? Because you have a midfielder that absolutely lit it up at Dortmund and could provide plenty of goals from midfield. So why isn't that happening under Mourinho?
I think that, again, that's what I was going to say, is that actually United have players to score goals from midfield. I think Paul Pogba should be scoring more goals from midfield. I think Juan Mata, Martial, Henrik Mkhitaryan should all be scoring goals. I think it's the consistency, as you mentioned. You know, each one of those attacking midfielders, not Paul Pogba, didn't play over 1,750 minutes, I think, which is tiny, absolutely tiny. I think in Neymar was nearly 4,000 minutes. Eden Hazard was 3,500. I think it's the consistency that Mourinho needs to stick with these guys. And one player that's looked really good in pre-season is Henrik Mkhitaryan. Looks so good either in a 3-5-2 as a central midfielder or out wide in his usual position on the left or on the right. He's looked really good. And I think this is going to be Mkhitaryan's season. It just, if he doesn't get injured in the first few months and he can get a role of games where he's impacting them massively, I think it's going to be, you know, crucial for United. I think the big players that are going to step up for United this season, Eric Bailly's going to be fantastic in the back. I think Pogba, of course, in midfield. Mkhitaryan as attacker midfield, and of course Lukaku through the middle. But I do agree with you. Goals from midfield should be there. There's enough quality there. Someone like Anthony Martial that's capable of moments of brilliance we saw in the friendly against Real Madrid.
The skill that he did on the quick feet
and how he went round Dani Carvajal like he wasn't there. The problem with that was one moment in 90-odd minutes of action or 70 minutes of action, which isn't good enough. And that's the problem with Anthony Martial. His consistency was there under Louis van Gaal in games, but it's not there under Mourinho. And that's something that Martial himself needs to work on and needs to be this effective. But one thing that would make Martial more effective is if he played in a 3-5-2 as a striker, because that gives him a lot more freedom. You know, United have looked good in a 3-5-2, but the strikers need to move a bit more. They need to come to the ball, they need to receive it to feet, they need to drift out wide. They need to basically play as auxiliary forwards, you know, on each flank. And I think that's something Martial will excel at, because if he picks up the ball as a striker, he could go wide, he can go inside, he could go forward. It opens up three avenues instead of having one avenue or two avenues, should we say, when he's on the left wing. He can either go down the line or he can cut in. Having that three option, you know, opens up those 1v1 situations, which he's so good at beating players 1v1. And again, I think for Martial's career, for Manchester United to win the Premier League, a 3-5-2 is where they've got to go. I think a 3-5-2 is mastered when you play it week in, week out. And you can play it against any system. There's a lot of differences that you've got to do. We saw how Guardiola played against Real Madrid in the friendly. He went with that 3-5-1-1, and the pressing and the defensive side of it was fantastic. But United, for United and City to excel in this system, they need to play week in, week out. It just suits everyone. It suits Mkhitaryan playing centrally. He played fantastic against LA Galaxy. Yes, it was LA Galaxy. But it was the right thing for a central midfielder in a 3-5-2 to almost become an inside forward. You know, push yourself up. It would push Pogba up as well. The wing backs can go forward, and you've got your two strikers. It's pretty much the Monaco shape of last season that did so well. If you think about it in the reverse, you've got the two centre halves, a defensive midfielder. That's the United back three. Then you've got Bakayoko who's pushing on a little bit, which would be the defensive midfielder. The two inside forwards, Lamar and Silva, the two wing backs, and of course the two strikers. So the 3-5-2 for me at the moment has the most tactical diversity, I think, of any formation that United could play, especially. And with, you know, so we spoke about Zlatan before. I was joking about Barcelona. I think Zlatan will re-sign for Man United in January and will play a vital role in their quest to either win the Champions League or win the Premier League.
It's the most ridiculous thing you've ever said.
Let's finish on youth players. First up, Manchester United youth players. Twin Zabi's been the player that's impressed me the most in pre-season. Fosu Mensah's looked very, very good at right wing back. Again, very happy that he's you know, in and around the side. Andres Pereira's looked very, very good on the ball. Could do a little bit of work on the timing of his tackle. Got booked in a pre-season friendly, which isn't great. And Scott McTominay, of course, who is 6'4", scored again a goal last week. I don't really know who United were playing, but he scored in the last pre-season friendly. Again, needs to improve on his forward passing. I think he's a little bit too shy on the ball at the moment, but very impressive. Twin Zabi, though, absolutely fantastic, especially playing as a left centre-back in a back three. Looks so good on the ball, even though he's right-footed. Incredible stuff there. Nico, in terms of pre-season, let's finish off with the City youth prospects. Anyone that's sort of stepped out and taken your fancy?
Obviously, Phil Foden has been pretty good on the ball, off the ball, not so much. I've also been... It's weird because I think there are a lot of players that are going to suffer from... Suffer's the wrong word, but, you know, not necessarily see their dreams fulfilled at City because of this change in the style of play. I think Patrick Roberts is someone that would excel in maybe a more counter-attacking based team, but to see how he would fit in under Guardiola consistently is, I think, not something that is realistic for him. And I'd like him to maybe develop as a player more at different teams. You know, he was fantastic at Celtic, and though I don't think they were a counter-attacking team by any chance, I think the way that they created chances was still a lot different from the way that Guardiola creates chances. So, you know, in terms of youth players, I'm really disappointed in the fact that Aleix Garcia, I haven't seen much of him, even though he was part of the squad last season. So, and he looks a fantastic, you know, central midfield prospect and really a player in the mold of sort of a Guardiola type signing. But in terms of other youth players, I think that's pretty much it.
Ooh, well, that's it. That's it for, you know, episode one of season two of the Statman Dave Football Podcast. That's been good. I've enjoyed it. If you want to see more of Nico or find more of Nico, go on to Twitter at @Nico_O'Morales. Nico, is any work that the people of the Statman Dave Football Podcast should be going checking out on your Twitter account or anything you wrote recently?
You know, the funny thing about that, Dave, is that you record a video, right?
Yes.
You record a video with someone.
Yes.
Name begins with L.
Yes.
You know? We won't say who. We're not into slandering here. And you work hard
Nico.
On that video. And then it never gets posted, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, but, you know, they can still check out other things at @Nico_O'Morales. I'll be putting out some writing, possibly for some actual paid writing. So hopefully that happens, but, you know, we'll see.
Nice, nice. Well, anyway, thanks for joining me, Nico. Until next time, till next Wednesday. Off season, we're going to do every single Wednesday. Get ready for the Statman Dave Football Podcast to return. Thanks for listening. Of course, go and like the podcast on iTunes and write a little review as well to get me pumped and excited about the world. But anyway, see you later. Goodbye. Over and out.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.